Welcome. I'm Eric Fleming, host of A Moment with Eric Fleming, the podcast of our time. I want to personally thank you for listening to the podcast. If you like what you're hearing, then I need you to do a few things. First, I need subscribers. I'm on Patreon at patreon.com/A Moment with Eric Fleming. Your subscription allows an independent podcaster like me the freedom to speak truth to power and to expand and improve the show. Second, leave a 5-star review for the podcast on the streaming service you listen to it. That will help the podcast tremendously. Third, go to the website, momenteric.com. There you can subscribe to the podcast, leave reviews and comments, listen to past episodes, and even learn a little bit about your host. Lastly, don't keep this a secret like it's your own personal guilty pleasure. Tell someone else about the podcast. Encourage others to listen to the podcast and share the podcast on your social media platforms, because it is time to make this moment a movement. Thanks in advance for supporting the podcast of our time. I hope you enjoy this episode as well. Hello, and welcome to A Moment with Eric Fleming. I am your host, Eric Fleming, and I hope everybody has recovered from their Thanksgiving feast. Christmas is right around the corner. I hope that you've survived your Black Friday shopping and Small Business Day shopping and any other kind of shopping you wanted to do, survived having discussions with relatives about politics or sports even. But I've got something on my mind that I want to talk about before we get into this end of the year stretch. Because as if everything goes right, we're going to close out the year with a lot of voices coming to the podcast to talk about some issues that feel we need to get discussed before the year is out. So before I get into my hot take, here is a moment of news with Grace G.
Thanks, Eric. Israel and Hamas agreed to a 4-day pause in fighting to allow humanitarian relief into Gaza and secure the release of 50 hostages. A federal appeals court ruled that only the U.S. government can sue under the Voting Rights Act. The federal civil rights trial of a former Louisville, Kentucky police officer charged in the 2020 death of Breonna Taylor was declared a mistrial after the jury could not reach a unanimous verdict. U.S. President Joe Biden opined in The Washington Post that the Palestinian Authority should ultimately govern the Gaza Strip and the West Bank, which Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu disputed. A judge in Colorado allowed Donald Trump to remain on the state's election ballot next year, dismissing a bid to disqualify him under the 14th Amendment for engaging in insurrection during the January 6, 2021 attack on the U.S. Capitol. The U.S. Supreme Court declined to hear an appeal by former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin of his conviction for the murder of George Floyd. A U.S. appeals court ruled Maryland's handgun licensing requirements unconstitutional, citing a U.S. Supreme Court decision that expanded gun rights. President Biden and Chinese President Xi met during the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation, or APEC, forum held in San Francisco, reaching agreements covering fentanyl, military communications, and artificial intelligence. Leaders from Africa and other nations met in Berlin, Germany for the G20 Compact with Africa conference, aiming to boost private investment in Africa. Lawmakers called for an investigation into allegations of sexual harassment and other misconduct at the U.S. Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. Elon Musk sued Media Matters, claiming they misled advertisers away from his social media platform X for anti-Semitic and racist content. And Former U.S. First Lady Rosalynn Carter died at the age of 96. I am Grace G., and this has been A Moment of News.
All right. Thank you, Grace, for that moment of news. And now I want to take one of those headlines that Grace talked about and kind of go in more in depth with it, with my hot take, or at least one of my hot takes today. And that's the one dealing with the Voting Rights Act, right? So let me read this little summary. It says the federal appeals court last Monday ruled that only the U.S. government, not private parties, can sue under a landmark civil rights law barring racial discrimination in voting, a decision that would significantly hamper usage of the Voting Rights Act to challenge ballot access, voting rules, and redistricting. The ruling, which will likely be appealed, could set up the next voting rights battle at the U.S. Supreme Court. The vast majority of Voting Rights Act cases are filed by private parties. For instance, the case that prompted the Supreme Court earlier this year to strike down Alabama's congressional map was originally filed by a coalition of civil rights groups. So, guys, this is based off a case that happened in Arkansas. So there was a federal judge in Arkansas that felt that the people that filed a lawsuit concerning redistricting there, or any, I think that was the issue, didn't have standing. And the only people that would have standing in his mind would be and I think I'm getting this right, that the judge ruled it and the appeals court sustained his ruling. I don't think they overruled his. I think they sustained his ruling that private citizens don't have standing, that the only entity that has standing in a voting rights case would be the U.S. Department of Justice, the Attorney General of the United States. And only that the Attorney General can file a case challenging a state with violating the Voting Rights Act. And two of the three judges on the panel that the appeals court that's over Arkansas, and I want to say that's the Fourth Circuit, don't quote me on that, but two of those three judges on that panel agreed with that judge that the way they see it is that you and I can't challenge our state's redistricting maps. We can't challenge whether a polling place has been closed or opened that would give black folks a disadvantage. And the way the current U.S. Supreme Court is configured, they might agree to that. Now, you say, well, maybe not, Fleming, because, you know, this was the court that said that Alabama's district was gerrymandered twice. They ruled that Alabama didn't get it right. And I think Alabama's finally going to get it right. Not by the legislative process, but by a federal court there to make sure that the state of Alabama has two black congressional seats. Right? Because the Republicans didn't want to do that. Well, now the situation would have to be that, and this is just me being hypothetical, I don't know how the actual process would work, but in my mind, this is what I think would have to happen. So in Mississippi, as well as other states, those of us in the legislature, if we think that something is getting ready to happen legislatively, or we get word that some municipality or some county is trying to enact some kind of policy that we have a problem with and we think might be unconstitutional, what we would do is write a letter to the Attorney General, and the Attorney General will render an opinion on it. And sometimes that works out in our favor, sometimes it doesn't. But that's a step that we took in order to say, okay, before we get any further with this, or even if legislation is passed, sometimes we'll write a letter to the Attorney General to get his opinion on it. And then we would use that to maybe file an injunction, if it's a favorable opinion, to file an injunction to stop it, right, in court based off of that opinion, and then kind of let the courts deal with it from that point on. And that's one of the reasons, because we were utilizing that so much that there was a ruling that said that the Attorney General and the state Supreme Court in Mississippi couldn't be in the same building. And so now the Attorney General's in the Sillars building, and the Court of Appeals and the State Supreme Court is in the Gatlin Justin building, right? But aside from that, that technique is maybe what is going to have to happen, a variation of that, right? So what I think is going to have to happen now, if the U.S. Supreme Court agrees with this appellate court, what's going to have to happen is that organizations like the NAACP or like the group in Alabama, or anybody that thinks that there is a problem with voting access or how a ballot is written, or, you know, movement of precincts or redistricting or whatever, anything that they believe is discriminatory or would cause a hardship to black voters or Hispanic voters or Asian voters, right? Or even women. Even though the intent of the bill was directed toward the denial of African Americans their right to vote, any group can utilize it now. And we have actually seen people on the flip side putting black folks in jail for violating the Voting Rights Act. But again, another aside. Anyway, what's going to have to happen is that whoever feels, let's flip it around to Alabama again. Let's say the Alabama case didn't happen before this ruling, and they wanted to challenge the redistricting. What would now have to happen, I believe, or one strategy maybe, is that that group writes a letter to the U.S. Department of Justice saying, hey, we think based on these grounds that this is a violation of the Voting Rights Act, and we would like for the Department of Justice to intervene and file a lawsuit to challenge it. And then it would be up for the Department of Justice to go ahead and do that, right? And more than likely, the Department of Justice will look at it. The Civil Rights Division will look at it and say, yeah, I think you've got a valid point. And they'll file a lawsuit. Now, that doesn't seem as cumbersome as it may be, but it will put an incredible burden on that department, because that department will probably have to get more lawyers and be in litigation, especially for a lot of these southern states, and really even more so these states that are the Republicans control the legislature. And That's like 38 states, right? Significant number of states. It's over 30. I know that. If it's not exactly 38, it may have changed because Virginia flipped, right? So you would say, well, boom, because kind of what happened before we got to this point about litigating was that it used to be we would go to the Justice Department and say, hey, this map violates the spirit of the Voting Rights Act. And then the Justice Department would have the authority to go to that state and just basically say, after they evaluated it and said, yeah, I think you need to redraw the map. And then the challenge would begin, right? But the Supreme Court took that authority away from the Department of Justice. And basically now we have to file a lawsuit. Well, now the move is, no, y'all can't file lawsuits. So initially it used to be a citizen or a group of citizens could say, we're challenging something, send that challenge to the Department of Justice. The Department of Justice, using the Voting Rights Act, Section 5, would say, yeah, y'all can't do that. And then the state would have to change or challenge it in court. When he took that away, then it became, we could go directly to court as citizens in that state and say, hey, this is unfair. And we as citizens would challenge the state directly. Now they want to take that away. So now the plan is for us to petition the Department of Justice to sue the state on our behalf and fight it out in court. Well, that'll make the process a little longer because now there's this added layer of convincing the Department of Justice to file a lawsuit, right? And then, you know, as it works its way through the courts, will it be timely enough to stop an election? Because see, in Georgia, federal judge said, yeah, Georgia's map is screwed, but based on the timing, we'll let it stand for this election and then come back and review it. Well, they did review it. And so Georgia has to have new maps for the 2024 election. And governor called a special session to handle that. So now timing becomes more of a play because now we've got to convince the Department of Justice. It all depends how many lawsuits are being requested at that particular time, if they have the capacity to do that, and then boom. We'll see what happens. But the other thing is this. If Donald Trump wins the election, that whole division for the Department of Justice, the Civil Rights Division, will be wiped out. And then you will have no recourse. Because then you would have to go directly to the Attorney General, if it was Attorney General Donald Trump appointed, especially in going into 2025. And the Project 2025 plan, that Attorney General is not going to give you the time of day. You understand? So again, this is one of those long game kind of deals where Donald Trump doesn't win or a Republican doesn't win. Then it just lengthens the process to challenge something that we all know is designed to dilute or weaken black votes. It just makes the process more convoluted. And that's been the goal of this Roberts Court ever since he's been the Chief Justice, is to dismantle the Voting Rights Act as much as possible, right? Or weaken it. because in his mindset, his argument is we don't really need that. People are fair and just and not racist anymore, which we all know is not true, right? So with that warped mindset that he and the other, and then you've got some justices who fall under his umbrella to just be racist and just to dilute black votes. Anyway, so the best case scenario is that Donald Trump doesn't win and we go through this convoluted process to challenge what these Republican legislatures that are still majority Republican legislatures, like Mississippi, for example. We will have to go through this convoluted process to challenge anything they do to impact black votes. The worst case scenario is we won't have any say-so ever again. And to be honest, it'll really be a moot point, because if Donald Trump gets elected, free and fair elections as we know them will no longer exist. We will be in the same category as China or Russia or any other country that quote unquote has an election, but magically that person gets 95 to 100% of the vote, right? That's where we will be. And again, when people hear folks like me talk about that kind of scenario, the first word that pops in their mind is hyperbolic, right? Exaggeration, or the phrase, that could never happen here. Well, it hasn't happened here, but it could. And if you really want to be honest, it kind of did happen in parts of the country, but not the country as a whole. Because if you ask your great grandfather, your grandfather even, or your grandmother, your great grandmother even, or some of your great aunties, people that are old enough to remember living in the South and how they were denied access to votes prior to 1965, then you kind of get a picture of what to expect, where you will have no say-so in the process, or in the case of people in Russia, Iran, or whatever, you'll be going through the motions, but it really doesn't matter because that person's going to declare victory and that's it. That's what Roger Stone was saying. Right. When this time, what, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, this is what he was saying when he was just telling Donald Trump, just say you won anyway. And keep the seat. If he pulls this off in 2024. That won't be rhetoric. That'll be reality. And he will put in the mechanisms, along with help from the Heritage Foundation and other groups, to make sure that happens. Again, they are already doing job fairs in Iowa and other places to get the people in place to serve in the U.S. government to carry this Project 2025 out. They're building their team. While we're sitting here being mad that Joe Biden is the age that he is, or, you know, finding every reason to be mad and not looking at the big picture, this is what's going on. And I get it if you want to say that to people who have never served in public office. They may have been lobbyists. They may have been organizers, you know, whatever. But But they've never been elected to a position. They've never literally raised their right hand and said, I swear to defend the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the state and uphold the laws thereof. If they never did that, then you would think, oh, yeah, well, they just talking. They don't know. Well, I did that. I served 9 years as an elected official, as well as organized, as well as protested, as well as being an activist, as well as being a lobbyist. I've done all that. And I'm telling you, based on my experience, my training, and my knowledge, right, that if Donald Trump gets elected, it'll be the end of free and fair elections. The handwriting is literally on the wall. And they keep adding more and more chapters to it, or more and more layers to it as we speak. And I know there are some of you who are praying and wishing and saying, oh man, but he's got all these indictments and he's in court and they about to take all his money and all this stuff. You know what I'm saying? It's like, we probably won't even deal with him come this time in November, less than a year from now. Donald Trump won't even be a factor. He won't even be on the ballot because he'd be in jail. Well, let me put some of that hope down. Dash some water on that hope, right? One, there's nothing that prohibits him from running for president while being in jail. Nothing. People have done it before. People have gotten votes to be president of the United States while sitting in a jail, have run active nationwide campaigns while sitting in a jail, in a federal jail, no less. So him being in jail won't stop it. Right? Him being broke won't stop it. Because all he does is go to his Truth Social or goes on television or has a press conference, whatever, and sends out all these letters and basically asks these poor people who are complaining about the price of groceries, who are actually literally saying, instead of Black Friday for TVs, how about Black Friday for eggs and milk and bacon? But those same people will give $25 a month to make sure that Donald Trump can pay his legal fees under the guise that you are paying for his campaign or donating to his campaign. All right? He's got enough people to finance that operation. So as long as he's got people committed to giving him money, he won't be broke. Right? At least not in the sense that you and I understand what being broke is. So there's that. So the bottom line is, in November of 2024, the only way to stop Donald Trump and his supporters and his sycophants and the people that embrace that mindset, those people in the Republican Party that are not man and woman enough to stand up against it, that kowtow to it, right? You have to vote against them. You have to show up on Election Day, the first Tuesday in November of 2024, and defeat them. That's the only way that's going to stop. And just like no matter how many bombs Israel drops, it's not going to totally eradicate Hamas. Each election is not going to totally eradicate the Republican Party as we know it. That will take some time. But the first step people have taken. They have shown it in referendums in Ohio and Kansas and other states. They have shown it in midterm elections and in off-year elections, like in Virginia. People have shown it. There's an appetite for it. So steps are being taken, but 2024 is going to be a huge, it should be the equivalent of Napoleon's Waterloo, right? For that phase of the Republican Party, that MAGA unit. That's what November 2024 should be. And you, the voter, have to make that happen. I don't care if they tell you you can't have water or food in the line. I don't care if the line stretches out for 3 miles. I don't care if it's 109 degrees in November. I don't care if it's a torrential downpour. I don't care if it's a record snowstorm. Whatever happens on that day, and, you know, if you have the privilege of early voting, take care of it early so you won't get caught up in anything cataclysmic. If you have absentee voting that allows you to state that you're not going to be in town on election day, take advantage of that and vote early. But by that first Tuesday, November of 2024, you need to have participated. More people voted in the last presidential election than ever before, and that was 150 million people. About 156 million. So about half the population. So that means there's a number of you who still haven't participated. And I'm going to need you to participate. Now, I would encourage you to make sure that this vote works, to vote for the current president that's in office, Joe Biden. You can vote for whoever you want to, but if you don't want Donald Trump to be president, that's really your only option. Because if you vote for the other four that's going to run, it's not going to help. You would have voted, and we appreciate you coming out to vote, but did you contribute to the demise of democracy, or you just sat out the battle? Right? And like a lot of people, you know, you can't wholeheartedly endorse one person over another because everybody makes mistakes and people make decisions that you don't agree with, but would I rather vote for a guy that I know that if I express a concern, or a group I represent or a group that I'm a part of expresses a concern, that'll at least be heard? Or do I want to vote for a guy that just on general principle, I'm going to be oppressed? I'm going to vote for the guy I disagree with on occasion, as opposed to the guy who wants to take away my freedom altogether. So no brainer for me. I don't know what it would take for some of you. And I think the majority of us get that. That we're not voting for oppression. But some of y'all might need a little convincing. So we'll use this podcast, and others will use their podcasts, and others will use their blogs, and others will use their essays and opinion columns and expertise on TV and radio to try to work on you. But we're not going to stop until we have that victory. Because if we don't have the victory, we may be stopped, right? They may shut us all down. So pay attention to what's happening in the courts. Pay attention to what's happening with these election laws, especially if you're in a state where the majority of the legislature is Republican, because they're going to do any and everything to make sure that your voice is not heard. And catch y'all on the other side. All right, so we're back. So I want to close out real briefly with just an observation, something that I want my listeners to pay attention to. And if you feel that I'm wrong with my take, please offer the feedback. And that invitation's on anything I talk about or anything my guests talk about on this podcast. You can reach out through www.momenteric.com and, you know, express your viewpoints about stuff that you hear on the podcast. But I just want people to look at irony sometimes and wonder why it's so easy for us to do things that will hurt us over and over again, or why we fall into the same traps and all that. And I, you know, I'm a big proponent of history. And although I'm not the greatest scholar on any or everything, I do think history offers a roadmap. And I do think that if we pay attention, especially those of us who put ourselves in leadership positions, and that's anywhere on the globe, if we become real students of history, we tend not to repeat the same mistakes that our ancestors have made. So almost 140 years ago, there was a conference in Berlin. And that conference basically was the European countries dividing up the continent of Africa for their gain. And because of that conference, there was all sorts of stuff happening, you know, Belgium and France and Germany and all these England, all these European powers, European countries were claiming their stake, the Netherlands, on the continent of Africa for the resources that the continent was offering at that time, because now the continent offers more stuff that we need more than they even knew about 139 years ago. But Africa has always been this plethora of resources that the rest of the world needs. And somehow, some way, the people of the continent don't get all the benefits from it. And in this day and age, we're seeing African billionaires now. We're seeing countries being smarter and becoming more of world players in the continent of Africa as far as resources that they offer. But there's still a lot of exploitation going on. And these are deals that have been locked in basically since this conference took place, right? It was because of this conference that even the conflict that's happening between Israel and Hamas in Gaza, this conference kind of offered a different solution, right? Because the plan was really for the initial plan was to set up in Uganda. There was going to be a strip of land that Belgium was going to offer to those Jewish settlers. And for whatever reason, that didn't pan out. Right. But all that was discussed at this Belgium conference, at this Berlin conference, I'm sorry. And Belgium was kind of the lead country, even though it was in Germany. Right. Fast forward literally 139 years later. And there was this major conference of the 20 largest, or I guess the 20 economic giants in Africa, in Berlin. And it was hosted by the German chancellor, and the whole purpose was to, quote unquote, develop trade relations with these G20 countries, right? And the United States had representation there, as well as, but it was primarily European nations, along with these African nations, to try, and Germany was the host, and trying to develop all these different trade agreements. And Germany kind of made some agreements with some countries prior to the actual meeting, right? So when I talk about some of the elements that are in Africa now that, you know, we need now that we didn't need 139 years ago, or it's like this element called cobalt, or cobalin, or I forgive me, but there's an element that's needed for our cell phones, right? There are other elements, of course, diamonds now, and there's the addition of oil and everything else. Now, I would assume, because I haven't looked at any document that has been signed or agreed upon or even entertained by these African nations as presented to these European nations, but I do know that the major powers, the European Union, the United States, Russia, and China, are all trying to get a peace and control of the continent. Now, it may not be in the way that, it may not be in the imperialistic way, let me put it that way, that was being thought of 139 years ago, where all of these nations were trying to make these countries colonies of their respective nations. But these trade agreements could be binding and very tricky. And the only thing that I would implore is that I think we should have trade relations with African nations, but I think they should be to the point where they're advantageous to that nation that we're trading with. Because the United States is going to make their money if we enter a trade agreement. We're going to make our money. And, you know, we can dictate the level of tariffs and all that kind of stuff. But the main thing we try to do in some of our agreements is to make sure that the conditions of the workers are fair, that they're getting paid livable wages instead of just getting paid enough where it won't be considered slavery, right? And I'm sure Russia and China are trying to sweeten up their deals too. China is kind of like doing this thing where, hey, we'll come in, deal with a crisis that y'all got going on. We'll help that. In return, when we come to you and say, hey, we'd like to trade with you, you would give us a favorable audience. And Russia is kind of doing the same thing, except in a couple of countries where they actually have like mercenaries in there, like I think Angola, somewhere like that, where they're actually like fighting. But even in that sense, they're trying to spin it as, hey, we're trying to fight for your democracy, right? So I want y'all, as we deal with the crisis that we have to deal with here as far as maintaining our democracy, especially those of us in the Black community, I want y'all to pay attention to what's happening with Africa. Now, I know there is a group of Black people in the United States, and I have touched on it a number of times. And as 2024 approaches. And as the election approaches, these folks are going to get really, really loud. Now, the cover that these folks will use will be reparations. Right? But the reality is that these folks are anti-immigrant, even more so than some of the Republicans, the white folk, right? And their rhetoric toward people from the continent is very, very disparaging, very, very, well, when we talk about people against Jews, we say anti-Semitic or Islamophobic, I guess Afrophobic. How about that? We'll just make up a word, see if it'll stick. These folks are Afrophobic in the sense that they hate African immigrants. And the context they say that they hate them is because these folks are trying to get in on the reparations if the reparations do come. And, you know, I've addressed that because it's like, even if you've had folks that are from Africa that have come to the United States as immigrants, doesn't mean that their ancestors weren't involved in the slave trade, because we got the people from, they got the people from Africa. So it makes sense that there would be some folks that might be related to people who were enslaved here. And then they, generations later, their descendants showed up in the United States as immigrants. That's a real possibility that could happen. And when you look at the fact that 90% of the black people in the United States can trace their ancestry to slavery, it's like, why even make that an issue? Right? But it's a cover. And these are the people that are talking about, well, I'm going to vote for an independent candidate. I'm not going to put that candidate in particular blast, because I don't know if that candidate really wants to be associated with these people. But, or they just not going to vote for Biden. Or they're saying, oh, well, you black folks that support Joe Biden, y'all are just shills and all that stuff. It's gotten to the point now where these black folks say, well, if you support Republican policies that discriminate against black folks, you're an Uncle Tom. And if you support Democrats, you're an Uncle Tom. So y'all don't support anybody, so that's the black position. It's insane. In America, that's insane. But you do you. But that rhetoric is, I'm not really trying to talk to them people, because those people could care less if Africa is enslaved again or not. Judging by the way that you talk about people from the African continent, right? Now, I get it. You know, y'all don't like Elon Musk. He's from the African continent too, by the way. You know, I don't like him. But as far as us black folks that came from the African continent, y'all got a problem with him. And I don't think that's any different than the White Knights or the Proud Boys or the 3 percenters or the 5% or whatever percent you want to be. If you ain't 100% down with being equitable and fair, I don't really care to associate with you, but that's an aside. The reality is that for those folks who are not part of that group of black folks that hate Africans, pay attention to what's going on. Make sure that the people that you elect to Congress, especially in the United States Senate, pays attention to what's going on, and even be proactive in making sure that black businesses in the United States can have fair trade and trading access with countries in Africa. See, because the United States Senate is the body that approves all treaties. So the president says, well, hey, I want to have a treaty with the G20. And we want to import X number of products, and we want to make sure that we can export X number of products, right? Like cars, for example, right? In exchange for the stuff that we need, the elements that we need for cell phones and increasing our production of semiconductors and computer chips, all that. We want after these G20 nations to buy more American cars or make more American cars available in their market. Just a random example I'm throwing, right? Well, if that treaty is put together, the U.S. Senate has to approve it before it becomes effective. So those states that have U.S. Senate races, pay attention to that or even make that an issue. Right? Because we want Africans to be prosperous, whether it's with European countries or with us, whether it's Russia or China. We want them to be prosperous. We don't want this to be a one-sided deal like it was 139 years ago. We want these African nations to make money. Because if more people are able to make money, whether it's by entrepreneurship or by working and getting fair wages, maybe some of these conflicts that are going on will go away because there won't be that added economic pressure that's driving one side or the other. It's been proven in a capitalistic society that the more money people make, the more that the wealth is distributed. I put it that way. The more that the wealth is distributed, the less conflict you have. And the examples are like smaller towns, not the United States as a whole, but some small towns in the United States where everybody's making money. They don't have as much crime. It's not a lot of racial division. Everybody seems to have a purpose in life, and everybody has, and there's a community. Now, granted, it's few and far between, but the examples are out there. And so now we want to make sure that the African continent has that too. Because, you know, we've always talked about we want to be an example to the world. Well, one of the examples, unfortunately, that we've given to the world is this authoritarian thing. Now, granted, Europe did it in World War II and all that, but in modern times, with people that may not have the cognition of history they should, even though they brag that they're better educated over there than we are, maybe in math and science, but I don't think y'all have a real grasp of history, but that's a whole nother conversation, right? The example they see is people like Donald Trump lurking around and given political leverage. Because we've seen it in South America. We've seen it in Brazil. We're seeing it now in Argentina. There's some European countries like Italy. France tried, but Macron beat that person off. But, you know, globally it's happening, so why wouldn't Africa, that sees the same news from the United States that everybody else is seeing, not have people try to fashion themselves to be that way? So it's important for us, even more so, not just to preserve our democracy, but to encourage democracy around the world. And so, and we want an economic empowerment around the world as well. So whatever we need to do as a nation, not to be imperialistic, but to be real trade partners with African nations, where those citizens benefit, right? And just to give you an example, real quick. So Mississippi is considered the poorest state in the nation, right? They have a $20 billion budget to operate the state, and it's the poorest state in the nation. Now, of course, that's not just state tax revenues. That's money coming in from federal programs, all that stuff. But still, they operate with a $20 billion budget. The country of Malawi, which has about the same amount of people, about 3 million. I don't think their budget is $3 billion. And the only reason why I know that is because I've talked to people from Malawi and, you know, churches I've been affiliated with, a lot of them build churches in Malawi because it's pennies on the dollar. Churches that cost $20 million to build in the United States might cost $20,000 and seat more people. Just saying. We should have agreements to build countries like that up. Not just export our religion or a religion, but goods and services so that these people can live a better lifestyle. Right? And, you know, I get it. You know, in different cultures, there's different values. So, you know, most people are not as materialistic as Americans. I get that. But when it comes to access to food, water, shelter, all that stuff, that's kind of a universal thing. And the more money people make, the better they'll have, better quality food, better quality water, better quality housing that they will have. So if we can get every nation in the world to have those three standards, maximized, and where people are living longer and they're living healthier and safer, then that's a major contribution. That's bigger than any contribution any Nobel Prize laureate could do. Right? If we as a nation set that example through our trade agreements to provide that opportunity. But if we're going to follow the example of 139 years ago and find a way to take advantage of these folks, I'm not down with that. And neither should you. Even the folks that don't like Africans, you shouldn't be for that because, well, you should be for economic empowerment because if they can make the money that they can make here, or they could have the same opportunity in their native country than they could here, then they won't come here. There won't be a need to immigrate. Right? So you might want to get on board with making sure that Africa is taken care of too. Just a thought. All right, guys. Enjoy your holiday season. Continue to be careful and be courteous and be kind to each other. Pray for the people that are in conflict. And until next time.